Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Hi folks, I'm Jack Kennedy and welcome to Farm Tech Talk, the livestock show. Once again, the weather is up, the grass is flying, and in general, farmers are happy right around the country. Shout out to our supporters, AXA, Grassland Agro, and ESB Networks for helping us to make this show happen. Let's hear from our specialists around the country. As normal, a quick fire questions for Adam, Darren, and Aidan. Remember, email your questions to farmtechtalk@farmersjournal.ie or WhatsApp 086-836-6465. Adam, quick fire for you. One in. Ask Adam, is it all dairy farmers that are buying the stock bulls? And is that pushing up the price?
It probably is, Jack, in the Hereford, maybe an Angus category, probably on the Limousine, Charley category, probably not. It's more traditional breeds. And yeah, there is a thought out there, I suppose, with increased usage of sex semen, maybe that there'll be more, you know, beef bred calves on dairy farms. Whether they lay eye or not, I suppose it has to be decided. But I'm hearing of dairy farmers coming to bull sales yet and looking for four or five bulls, something that we haven't seen before, so it probably is.
Okay, you might have something good to say about them so later on. Darren, ask Darren, does he expect many sheep farmers to move into organics? And if so, where will the lamb be sold?
Yeah, Jack, it's a hard one to put a gauge on. I think that you'll probably get an increase next year if you see the rate of organic payment going up, which is proposed under the next CAP reform. Say the recent tranche is closed. Where is it going to be sold, Jack? Maybe the American or the US market will, I suppose, maybe slightly increase the demand for organic lamb. But in general, you're relying on high-value European markets, Germany, Belgium, and I don't see a big change. That's going to be one of the biggest challenges, is marketing the extra organic lamb or extra organic beef.
Yeah, finding a home for some of the existing organic lamb has been a challenge up to date. We might come back to that, Darren, later on in the main show. Aidan, one quick fire for you. Tell Aidan, I'm stocked at 4.5 cows per hectare on the grazing area. I have no silage left over. I want to spread more nitrogen on a silage paddock to maximize winter feed, but I'm conscious there is clover in the paddock. What are my options?
Sure, you either spread the nitrogen or you don't spread the nitrogen. I would say if you're stocked at 4.5 cows a hectare, you have only really one option, Jack, and that's to spread nitrogen, because that's a demand of almost 80 kilos a day, you know, which is a savage high demand. In order to sustain that, even forget about silage like for a moment, yeah. In order to sustain that, you're going to have to spread nitrogen. You know, clover being there is well and good, but look, it'll probably still be there after the nitrogen is spread. I think the issue in that farm is that its stocking rate is probably a little bit too high. I'd rather see the farm stocked at 4 cows a hectare and skip over paddocks as needs be. We don't have much information if that's the overall farm stocking rate or the overall milking platform stocking rate or just for the time of the year or whatever. But winter feed comes first, you know. It probably comes second to grazing, but it's hugely important over and above clover. So I'd say spread nitrogen.
Okay, we might come back to that again later on in the show. Adam, you've a nice piece. You know, it's Chagas's analysis that's shown there's a big rethink going on in terms of how suckler beef production in Ireland is going to be produced in the coming years.
There is, Jack. I suppose Paul Crossan, who's beef enterprise leader now in Chagas and Grange, he's really good at modelling different scenarios and different systems and what effects, I suppose, external outputs or external inputs can have on a system. And I suppose when the Chagas roadmaps for where suckling was going were developed in 2020, you were looking at a beef price of 375, concentrate price of 255, urea at 390, and silage contractor cost coming in around 250 a hectare. A lot of people are asking questions, what effect does 2022 prices have on beef systems going forward? You know, because there's been an awful lot of change in the last 2 years. You know, beef prices has went up to 450, 460, whatever, even more of a base price in the last couple of months. Concentrates up to 330, probably will go more as well. Urea up at 950 a ton, and silage contractor costs up to 350 a hectare. So Paul, I suppose, inputted all those different scenarios into a model and really has quite alarming results came out of that, showing the difference between high stock farms and low stock farms. And really, in a nutshell, Jack, what it says is that the lift in beef price and the lift in input prices, low stock farms are coming out of that okay. And they're actually seeing an increase in gross margin between those two different scenarios, between 2020 and 2022. But higher stock beef farms, which are stocked at 2.6 livestock units to the hectare, I should have said that, the low stock farms are 1.6, the high stock farms are 2.6. They're actually seeing a drop, a 17% drop from 440 to 367 a hectare, will say, go into that higher beef price. And you might say, God, like, people think we're getting on really well at the moment because beef price is high. Mm. But when you put it into this, it doesn't, and it could change the way we look at, I guess, low stock farms. Because really, if we look at policy and look at the direction of that, it's pointing to more extensification, and it could force farmers to look at organics actually in the future. Because if we can make the same amount of money out of stock on our farm at 1.6 versus 2.6 on a dry stock farm, well then why would you push for that extra livestock unit and have all the work associated with that if the same return is out of that lower stock on it?
And take your organic payments on top, right? We'll come back to that in a minute. But Adam, is it fair to say, like, I mean, of your suckler family, like we'll say, is there not a large proportion of them in that lower stock and rate category as it is? You know, that there's actually not many in that higher stock category. Or am I wrong on that?
Yeah, there is, Jack. The vast majority of those farms along the west are stocked at 1.6 and possibly even lower, you know, on part-time farms. But the Chagas advice for the last 20, 30 years, as long as I can remember, has been increase your stocking rate, increase your output, and that's a path to profitability in terms of matching it to grass growth, making sure your farm is growing more grass, and then increasing your stocking rate all the time. But this is a complete U-turn now on that advice in terms of what this analysis shows. But this analysis shows that higher stock farms, really there's no, well, I'll not say no future, but it's definitely questionable in terms of running that extra livestock unit. And probably as regards environmental payments and stuff in the future as well, they'll be easier retrieved on 1.6 versus 2.6 in terms of eco schemes and stuff like that.
Okay. I mean, coming back to the organics piece, like, and you were saying that potentially you could tag this organics piece onto the back of that extensive system, like we'll say, and take the payment and rock and roll on that, you know. But I mean, does the organics kind of piece not tie you back a bit as well in terms of you're kind of, not everyone wants that organic meat, or not everyone is going to kind of buy it off you, or not everyone is going to give you a premium for it? And, you know, are you limiting your options to an extent if you go down that organic route on top of your extensification piece?
You possibly are, Jack, but this is about chasing payments, I guess, and it's about, I'll not say paper farming, but it's about maximising your payments and making sure that, you know, the future of your farm is there to try and, you know, support it for the next generation or whatever. And if that means going organic to get that 170 euros a hectare, really the market hasn't been developed enough. There is no premium in organic, you would say, beef production. There might be for some, but the vast majority of organic beef farmers are selling their beef in a conventional way. They're selling it in marts like Drumshambo or Kilmallock at organic beef sales, and probably they're not any, we'll say, dearer than normal sales. So really, you'd be putting the cart before the horse in terms of maybe going organic without a market being developed. But that's it could push. Like, we've 250 million coming down the track with us toward being headed towards organic production. So it's obviously where policy is going, and this may just, we'll say, you know, line things up for that policy in terms of the increased fertilizer prices may push people to look at that option.
Yeah, coming back to kind of, I'll call it the ordinary farmer and the conventional price and the conventional production. Beef price is up a touch again this week, Adam, is it?
Yeah, another jump in Donegal, Jack. I don't know what we do only for foil meats in Donegal, but 10 cent up, and that's keeping everybody else honest, especially in the northern half of the country. You know, they're losing cattle to Donegal, some of the factories up there, so they've had to increase as well. 5.10 for heifers, 5.05 for bullocks. Cows took another jump this week, especially in the south, to 4.60 there for mixes of O and P grade. You know, Holstein, well-covered Holstein cows. Real good trade. Manufacturing beef, again, is driving on. And looking around Europe and looking across the world, I looked at Argentina last week, a long way away from here, but it broke the €5 a kilo barrier, 5.05 for an R3 steer in Argentina. That's up from, I think, 3.29 for the same week in 2021. And really, we're not keeping track with that. We're still 20, 30 cent behind that composite beef price across Europe. The Netherlands as well, cows, serious good trade. Polish young bulls heading for 480, 490, you know, unheard of. So really, we have more to go. Beef kill went up this week, a good bit up to, as far as 36,500. And we've a lot of extra cattle. We've an extra 25,000 cows killed in 2022, which is, again, it's a positive because it'll take the pressure off for the rest of the year.
Has that beef price rise, Adam, got to do with the good pedigree bull sales that you're talking about and that you have lots of in the journal this week?
Yeah, possibly, I suppose. Look, confidence is high, Jack, at the moment in terms of even weanlings this week. If we look at our map bids analysis, we're seeing that weanlings, you know, the top end of bull weanlings in the 300 to 400 kilo category are up at 330 a kilo. So I suppose if you bring five of them to a mart, Jack, and they're up at sort of 1,200 and 1,300 euro, you're going home with 5,000 or 6,000 in your pocket. And if you have to buy a bull, I suppose next week or the week after, maybe you might do that before you pay the fertilizer bill. But it's leaving you in a strong position. And also, guys that are finishing cattle at the moment, you know, like a bullock or a bull, they're coming into 2,000 euros there at the minute in terms of finished cattle. So they're fairly strong coming back around the ring. But I'd say, as we said earlier, I'd say a little bit of that bull sale, you know, in terms of that real positive trade, is a little bit dairy farmer driven. I'd say you're seeing more dairy farmers out this year. I don't know why. Maybe Aidan might have more insight into that, but you're seeing more dairy farmers out looking for bulls this year than we have seen in other years. A lot of on-farm sales taking place as well. That's leaving lower numbers at sales, so that's leaving a higher averages at those sales.
Adam, you were at the Hall of Fame Awards, and you were dancing to the tune of Tom Allen the weekend, I understand.
Yeah, no, I was tramping to the tune of T.R. Dallas, Jack. No, a great night. In fairness, Michael Flanagan spearheaded these awards a number of years ago, and looked in terms of honouring pedigree breeders that have given their life. Like Mary Gilfinnan was there, Joe Gilfinnan's wife, who unfortunately passed away in 2020, but he received the Hall of Fame from the Irish Charley Cattle Society. And like what these people and all the people that were there have done for their own breed, you know, selflessly over the years in terms of promoting the breed and being out there at shows and really driving on pedigree breed societies. Look, at the deserved recognition. Paul Sykes was there. He got it from the Irish Limousine Cattle Society. There's too many to mention. And actually, next week we've a special shows and showing supplement in the Farmers Journal, and we're going to profile all the winners in that. So pick up a copy of next week's paper and see all the winners in that.
What award did they give you?
I got best journalist, Jack. Best journalist.
Oh, good man. Yeah, no, fair play. I couldn't expect that less. Come here, like these flashy sales are up and going again, and these roans of Twitter and these shorthorn type heifers. Like I see that JLX sale, like, you know what I mean? But really, just explain to those that are not kind of close to that what that JLX sale is about. Like,
it's really hard to explain, Jack, in terms of the economics of this, but people definitely see a value in that, in terms of that 200 heifers sold at that sale last Saturday, averaging 3,000 a piece. In terms of, it was a massive sale. 25% of the heifers went actually back across the water, across to the UK, across to England and Scotland and Wales. And actually, it was a first for Harrison and Hetherton, the auction house in the UK actually came over to do this sale on farm on James Alexander's in County Antrim. A lot of those heifers are sourced in the south. And the funny thing is, a lot of southern buyers then go back up to Antrim to buy those heifers in calf and bring them back down again here to calve them. Look, it's a following. He's built up a following, and that high-end stuff, there seems to be a real good demand for those high-end heifers. Heifers are obviously doing well for customers, or they wouldn't be back buying heifers again. But I guess not for everybody in terms of those Belgian blue heifers, really well-muscled heifers. You know, maybe you might say there might be some calving issues with those, but those top end producers are able to handle those and they're able to get on pretty well with the progeny.
Are they aimed for the likes of Balmoral Shoals coming up next week? Are they?
Yeah, so some of them will be, Jack. I suppose it's not everybody will hit that, you know, in terms of you'll breed a long time before you'll breed a winner at Balmoral Show. But yeah, there's a big following there on the commercial scene, and there'll be a lot of them cattle will be in Balmoral Show next week, kicking off next Wednesday in Belfast, the biggest show in Northern Ireland. We're up there for the number of days. So I'd say, yeah, any of the listeners in to call into the Farmers Journal stand and have a chat. But yeah, again, as I said last week, really good to be back. And I know there's a lot of excitement around Northern Ireland in terms of heading to that show next Wednesday.
Good job, Adam. We'll chat to you next week. We'll get a review of what's happening. Thanks for that. Darren, you weren't up at the JLX sale, were you?
No, Jack. Although there was a different black and white sheep making big money down in Tullow on Monday. There was a summer spectacular that the highlight of it was a 7-year-old yo selling for 1,200 euros. I think it was a Dasenkopf yo. So there was Dasenkopf, which are known as these badger face. There was Dutch spotted, which are another Dutch breed, and then there was a Valios black nose as well. So, look at, as Adam said, it's creating a following. They're relatively new breeds. There's a lot of sort of the show elements about it. The big thing, look at that, you'd have to say, is that it generates a bit of a buzz. It generates interest from young people, and That's all needed too. Like, you know, we can be very serious around stocking rate, around kilos of output, all of that. But like, some of these sales, they do generate that. And look at that, Ellen Durkin was there for us and has a nice report in the paper with that.
And as you say, Darren, as you say, it brings livestock handling skills into young people as well. And you know, and they have that piece about it. Like, I mean, as long as we keep them in context in terms of like they're not commercial ventures in many instances, you know, any of these prices that we're talking about, like it's a different type of a kind of an enterprise that we're talking about.
Yeah. No, you could argue that for the man selling, it's very commercial because he's onto a winner. And look, you'll all see that the first people to bring in these new breeds and this flush them or this import them, that they're the ones, I suppose, that win at the beginning because the market does get flooded out after a while. Like we can go back, say, maybe 10, 15 years and we have the first, say, of these new breeds when the Zwarbers came in. We had Blue Texels, actually, maybe 6-7 years ago, and they made King's Ransom at sales. And in the last 2 years, you've just spotted and Dasenkopf and Black Nose Valley is. Like, look, they're going to be small numbers. They're not going to displace the Suffolk or Texel or Charley, but it's another element of the sector.
Yeah. Right? Come here, you had a health checkup at the BPS clinics, did you?
Would you believe I didn't even check my own one? I should have checked it there, but I was there to see whether it was okay. But no, look, I call into Van Lestore, Jack. We often pick holes in if the department don't do something. And rightly so, that's what we're there for doing. But when they do something right, I'm a believer of this. Look, we go and visit it and acknowledge it and see what it is. And I think the BPS clinics have been a winner. They're going since, you know, I think they could be going near enough 10 years, Jack, at this stage. But they're going really in earnest since 2015 when the tillage, say, online became mandatory, 2018 when it became mandatory for all online applications. The department hadn't them for the last 2 years because of COVID, but they were back with 20 locations this year. And like, there's a lot of people that rely on them. So like the department will pass about 1,000 people through the doors. As I said, I called to Ben Snow not too far away from me. And look at the queries are anything, Jack, from land eligibility to transfer of entitlements. Unfortunately, there's always a couple of cases where an applicant has passed away and family members are in to see what their options are or get the application submitted to safeguard this year and then see about transferring or whatever. But we just went through, look at some of the main points and some of the main things. And another thing this year is that the confusion around 2023. So we've talked so much here around active farmer status, around, say, new ANC stocking rates, around livestock unit values. And like the department people I was talking to, they were very, very keen and rightly so to say, look, 2022 is the last year. We can't take our eyes off the ball. We have to safeguard your payment for this year, and then we can move on and look at 2023. And that's an sort of added element as well, is that they're dealing with sorts of queries that are probably next year's queries, and are just making sure that everybody gets going. Like one of the big things they were saying to me is, in some of them, look, they're getting a bit of frustration from people that are maybe taking out scub, or this maps have taken out scub this time last year. And some farmers are saying, Ginny, I'm taking this out now to add it back in next year, and yeah, it'll be eligible next year, won't be eligible now. Look, that's simply an EU ruling. It's the way the case is. We can, I suppose, be happy that some farmers are going to get 30% of that area included next year. It'll probably sort out some fellas that have been leasing out bits and pieces of entitlements, that will bring their house back in order, and also balance the whole argument around environment and biodiversity when we're showing more of that land now coming back into the system as well.
Yeah, okay, no, you're right. So it is worthwhile, and there is plenty of those clinics, as you say, still up and going. I see a couple of ads in the journal this week with the locations of the various clinics. So, I mean, it's worthwhile for those that are interested or have a query to just to shoot in and get plenty of helpful staff, as you say, in the department.
And it's important because, like, we got the figures there on for yesterday's paper, and like 83,000 applicants in so far, in line with other years, but there's still 40,000-45,000 applications still to come in. Like, so now look, it's always the last 2 weeks are busy. Some people have delayed, some people are looking at that. The other message I'd be saying to anyone is, even if you're waiting on land, if you don't know about taking out a site, about putting in a bit of land you're trying to rent, get your application in. You can still amended up to the 31st of May, but Jeannie, don't miss out on getting an application because you're waiting for something like that.
Okay, nice one. Darren, to bring it back to basics, there's a couple of guys inquiring, I suppose, about scuttery back ends and lambs, like we'll say, with a flush of grass, etc., and that kind of thing. You have a bit of a plan in terms of a dosing plan for the year ahead, because there's a lot of talk on kind of resistance to the white warmers, etc., in lambs and in sheep in general.
Yeah, sure. Look at Jack, there's, I suppose, worries in this. Some farms have triple resistance now, in that they have resistance against your white, your yellow, and your clear, which I suppose is your ivermectins or moxidectins. Not as much to the moxidectin, but to the ivermectins, there is a fair bit. Like, and then farmers don't have as much options as of what they do. And look, a part of that happens now, say, part of that resistance develops because people come in and they start dosing for the matodiris now with doses that aren't needed. They come in and start dosing for worms where they're not needed. And all of that ramps up, I suppose, the rate of resistance developing. And like, the plan is just looking at it. It's part of an industry initiative we've been involved in last year, and it's supported by a number of the animal health companies, the department. Chagas are leading it up. And it's around sort of maybe thinking before you dose. And aspects like taking fecal egg counts to see, do you need to dose? Maybe looking at the performance of lambs, using that as a trigger to see, do you need to dose? But also accurately seeing, well, what are you dosing for? Like, there's no point going in now and using a heavy dose that will treat a lot of your roundworms when it's nematodiris is still going to be your issue. Likewise, you can come in and give a few doses for nematodiris, and it could be coccidiosis that's the problem. So it's to get to the root of the cause, and it's to review what you did last year and don't continue to do the same thing. Like, the old tried and tested thing when even we were going to college was dose at 5 weeks, 10 weeks, and then a wean and again. Like that day is gone now, so it is. And look, at some people mourn the fact that they say, sure, that's what has us in the situation. Well, there's no point looking in the past either. We have to look forward at that. And look, at the last thing is this. There is options, even if you do have triple resistance, there's options there to talk to your advisor, talk to, say, your vet. Some of them doses can be doubled up, and then the new doses can be used strategically to keep on top of things. But it's all about sort of trying to take simple steps now to leave you in a better position. And if you are lucky enough to not have resistance, that you don't develop in the next few years.
Is there many guys, Darren, testing testing dung samples to see what they have, like, and is it worthwhile?
It is worthwhile, Jack. It's loader. Like the amount of them that's testing is like I'd establish or put a guess on it, Jack. Like if you had over 1,000 out of the now, I look at there's 30,000 sheep block owners, but the National Farm Survey would say there's probably 17,000 that has significant numbers that are that you could sort of term as intensive sort of systems, and they are the ones where resistance, I suppose, might develop. Now it can develop on any farm, but they're the ones that are probably maybe dosing. There's a bit more pressure on worm burdens, that type of thing. Like they really need to be doing testings. And look at the department have an initiative out this year. We haven't looked at it too much. It's probably something we should look into a bit more. But this, the TASAH, the anti-parasitic, say option for farmers. It's this free service. Farmers can opt into it. You get a consultation from a vet and you get 2 fecal egg counts for the same thing. And what I'd be saying is, look, it's probably a good initiative. A lot of farmers could do it. And even if they used it just to get a couple of fecal egg samples, get a reduction test done to see, do they have resistance there? Or just even do a test when you're going to think about those to see what is the case. Because you made a comment there about the scutery back ins. And look, a lot of time, that is what has worms. But there's research done as well to show that some of them lambs that have it is just maybe for the change in dry matter and grass, the change for the flush of grass, and it could be lambs that in scouring that have the high worm burdens that you need to be careful of.
Yeah, okay. No, excellent. Darren, last one, and I leave you alone after this. In terms of price, like, I mean, there's probably some of those big single lambs from those early lambing flocks that are coming near the 38 or 40 kilos, like, are they at this stage? Like, is there much movement in terms of numbers of spring lambs coming out, like we'll say, and I suppose, where's the trade going, do you reckon, this week?
The numbers of spring lambs, Jack, are surprisingly low. Like now, I know some people might say, oh, there's less people creep feeding, but that shouldn't have affected the early season, you would imagine, because most of them people are in a system anywhere where they're going to feed and they're going to push lambs on. Like last week's kill was 6,000 compared to 8,000 for the same week last year. Now, look, there is a lot of hoggets in the system, 38,000 hoggets killed last week, 13,500 above this time last year. They've started on their seasonal decline. That was 10,000 lower than the week before. So maybe that's maybe slowing down spring lambs coming on. Maybe the fact grass growth rates, rotten flush up to now might be slowing spring lamb numbers as well. But look, at prices are steady. You're going to have for the next 2 weeks the normal sort of standoff or cat and mouse games between factories and farmers. We've seen it this week. Some factories pulled hogget prices by 20 cents a kilo, but they're still paying regular suppliers what they were last week. It's trying to ease that price back. But at the same time, demand is good. Sales for Ramadan, which was early on this week, have reports are very good. So there's been a clear out of what sort of sheep meat was there. So I'd say, Jack, look, definitely spring lambs are going to stay solid. There will continue to be a pressure on hogget prices just because that's what the season does as we move across the spring lambs. But I'd say that there's no major sort of black clouds on the horizon anyway at the moment.
Okay. Darren, 100%, leave it at that for this week. We'll chat to you again next week. Aidan, I mean, Adam was saying there at the top of the show that there's a lot more dairy farmers in the market for pedigree stock bull. Do you see much activity on the dairy farmer front in terms of, are you seeing it that dairy farmers are more active in terms of purchasing stock bull?
Definitely, Jack. Yeah, the much greater influence or interest, I should say, in stock bulls this year. I suppose there's two things at play. Number one, replacement heifer calves can't be sold. Surplus heifer stock, there's no demand for it. Secondly, then, I suppose, sex semen, which is, you know, this is the first year we've got the lab going in Ireland. Massive increase, we've in the paper this week, massive increase in the interest in sex semen, which I suppose is a big fear that the egg companies would have had historically as to you know, reasons for why we shouldn't have a sex semen lab in Ireland, that you're going to have less dairy straw sales, which is probably going to come to pass this year because, you know, farmers can get more heifer calves from less dairy AI. And as a result, you know, normally they do 6 weeks of AI. Now they're going to do probably 3 weeks of dairy AI and then let off stock bulls for maybe 9 weeks, or, you know, do beef AI as well, or a combination of both of those things. So, like, definitely, I'd say that's probably explaining some of the reason why there's much more of an interest in beef bulls.
And I suppose, Aidan, the other piece, like we saw kind of a dairy Frisian bull calves, we'd say making, you know, €2, €2, €5 kind of early on in the season, you know, and they were perfectly good calves, but they were young calves, etc., and that kind of thing. And that probably turned a lot of farmers away from that type of an animal, and they saw kind of Whiteheads and Anguses making that little bit more in the mart ring. You know, it's a small thing that can kind of influence a piece like that.
It is, Jack, but sure, I mean, like, if everyone goes for Herefords or Angus, then this season and next season, the Hereford and Angus is worth €5 or €2. Like, so, you know, there's a glut of calves going to come next February and March, no matter what happens, no matter what breed they are. And I'd say the prices are going to be low enough, you know, for all breeds, to be honest, because there's so many calves there, and there's, you know, potential issues around exporting, and IBR cropping up now has been another concern that wasn't there before. So, I don't know where it's going to end up. I mean, definitely, I'd say farmers are looking to for these beef breeds, not necessarily to make more money, more so to give a more saleable calf. A calf that's going to be in more demand for the likes of those people that are buying the dairy beef calves. Because look, whether they like it or not, there's more interest from the beef side anyway, in terms of coloured breed, whether that's an Angus or Black or a Hereford or a Continental, than the plain black and white, even though in actual fact, like, you could make more profit, and this has been shown in other trials from the dairy bred animal compared to some of those, you know, because a lot of those Herefords and Anguses, they're not super now, you know, they're small butty calves. We've often had the discussion here about that, like, and you know, some of those stock bulls being sold are going to breed small calves as well, so they're not going to be better.
Correct. No, I mean, you're right, and that's why it is an important topic for dairy farmers. I mean, in some cases, they might be better continuing to AI, you know, I know there's the whole labour issue associated with that, but they could potentially have a bit, if they have the right customer, they could potentially have a more saleable product, and they got a better product because you're using a kind of an AI straw that has been proven to some extent.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I've been on a few farms now over the last few weeks, and some cracking calves, you know, on farms from dairy cows, like almost as good as the suckler calf, to be honest. They're out of dairy cows, but they're from, you know, beef, proper good high DBI beef AI straw. And like, you know, if they're super calves, whereas you go to other farms then and you see the progeny from some of these, you know, short gestation ones, that sure, they're worse, you know, they're worse than the Frisian calf in terms of size and not going to get much better, like, you know, they're always going to be small.
No, the opportunity to get the carcass weight is not there, as you say, in those type of animals, and it costs as much to rear them to 2 years of age. So you end up that you're in a negative position because you just don't have the carcass weight at the end of the day. I mean, in general, Aidan, is like the weather is probably suiting breeding, like in terms of, like, just the management of it and, you know, heat detection and that kind of thing. Is that fair to say, like?
Definitely. Like, I mean, since the weekend, I mean, the amount of cows going in, coming, but has gone through the roof. Like, so it's been a great start. You've got all the conditions, you know, it's dry overhead, grass growth is plentiful and nutritious, and it's warm as well. So all the ingredients are there now for, you know, a good start to breeding. You're just hoping that cows are going to hold, you know, but generally you're getting strong heats as well, which is a good sign. It's a good sign of health in the cows, but everyone is very busy at the moment. Because a lot of farmers now are doing the AI in the heifers for the first 10 days or so, and then letting off stock pools with them. So the first 10 days or 2 weeks of the breeding season is always hectic because you're watching heifers and watching cows, and heifers take a huge amount of time.
Mm. Aidan, in terms of grass growth, and I mean, we've touched off of there with all the lads. Like, I mean, is it ahead of normal, or, you know, are kind of on par, or what's the kind of the lie of the ground like in terms of kind of current growth rates, I call it, for a start?
It's ahead of last year, but last year was poor, you know, so I wouldn't be taking that as a parameter. But generally it's in around par, Jack. You know, April growth rate was lagging for the last few weeks in April. It's good now. I mean, the predicted growth rates are up there around 60 or 70 kilos per day. A lot of farmers are hitting 80, 90 kilos a day. You know, those that are, you know, have better varieties and are spreading more nitrogen, I suppose they're growing better now. But it's in around what you'd expect for, you know, it's the first week in May. I mean, if we're not going to grow grass now, you know, we're you know, this is our chance. And everything is aligning together for good growth rates. But I would say that, you know, with less nitrogen being sprayed this year compared to other years, we're probably not going to get the same peak and for as long in terms of growth rates. So I'm a small bit worried. And we had a quick fire this morning there earlier on, you know, you know, the farmer stock to 4,500 a hectare. For me, that's fine if we're spreading, you know, a bag of can after every grazing. But like, those days are gone. You know, there's not many people doing that this year because of the cost of nitrogen and the availability of it. So you're not going to sustain those massive high growth rates that's going to, of, you know, 80, 90 for 3 or 4 weeks in the trot. I'd say we're going to probably grow 80, 90 this week. It'll drop back to 70 and 80 then next week. And sure, look, we're going to settle somewhere around the mid 60s, I'd say, for the rest of the summer.
I mean, there was some criticism of from ICMSA in terms of dairy farmers not getting the 1,000 euros per farm in terms of the silage subsidy, I call it. Like, I mean, there probably is some farmers, some dairy farmers, like, that are eligible for that. Like, if everyone, you could say, is eligible for it, you know, the kind of way. But it's a big decision, and ICMSA were calling it out not to include dairy farmers in that piece.
Actually, yeah, Jack, it's, you know, I mean, there are dairy farmers under pressure, like cash flow issues. Not all dairy farmers are, you know, whether it's scale or land. I mean, the average herd size is 80 cows. So half the dairy farmers in the country are milking less than 80 cows. And sure, there's another probably 25% of those are milking less than 30 or 40 cows. So there are a lot of smaller herds that should be eligible, I would say, for this cash flow bonus. And sure, look, it's their support. It's only 1,000 euros. Like, it's not massive money, but it's a lot of money for someone that maybe wouldn't be making a whole lot of money in the year, you know? So yeah. I can see their point. You know, the initial reaction was that it was available for all farmers. So, but I agree, look, I mean, those at larger scale, I mean, they don't, you know, you'd rather see it go to those that need it. But I don't think it's right to say that carte blanche that no dairy farmer deserves his payment.
Yeah, no, painting everyone with a wooden brush. In terms of, I was just doing a follow-up piece on the fixed milk price schemes. Do you get, you know, in terms of, so last week we ran in the news pages, we ran the case studies of the various farmers that were, I suppose, cut out badly in terms of the open market prices, a lot better now than the fixed milk price. This week, I was just following up and getting a kind of a national picture from it in terms of, like, who's caught in it, like, in terms of looking at the various co-ops. Like, I mean, the reality is there's a pocket of farmers in Glanbia region and a pocket of farmers in North Cork co-op, and they're the ones that are kind of where there's over 25% of the volume in Glanbia and over 25% of the volume in North Cork. The rest are relatively small, you know, I mean, less than 10%, less than 5%, less than 1% for a lot of the co-ops that are for suppliers that are tied up into the fixed milk price piece. Like, do you get much? I mean, I was asking the question, like, are they dead in the water now? Like, and do they need to change the rules of the game, like, before they kind of get farmers back interested in fixed milk price schemes again? You know, albeit that if you looked at it, look back last year over the previous 10 years, they were still winning in terms of the fixed milk price piece. But there's some farmers getting badly burnt at the moment. Like, do you get the feeling that dairy farmers are kind of want to change and won't engage with fixed milk price schemes again unless there is some kind of change?
Well, I'd say you can kind of categorize them in two sections. I would say there's the casual observer that has taken part in fixed milk price scheme, put in, you know, 5, 10, or 15% of their milk into it, just, you know, kind of out of interest sake as much as anything else, and hedge their bets on that amount of milk. I mean, for them now, they'd probably say, God, I'm getting burnt on this milk now. It's just, you know, they mightn't engage again, but they don't really need to engage, Jack. Like, so then there's the other cohort of those that have maybe a much higher percentage, over 35% or 40-50% of their milk fixed. And they fixed that milk a bit, and, you know, we had it last week that they were advised to, by their accountant and their bank, and others say, oh, that's not true, you know, they wouldn't advise that. But in reality, they did advise that. Like, you know, I do think that is the case, because they needed to have security to pay back the loans, pay back the you know, the rental income on the land. So, you know, they've massive borrowings or some other reason why they can't afford to take the risk in the market. Yeah. And if that opportunity for them is no longer available, then it's, you know, that's a negative, I would say. And they're going to be worse off as a result of this, even though they're worse off now, because they're, you know. So the issue for me is not fixed milk prices per se. It's the system around, you know, linking in the cost of production as well as the cost of the output. So that's what needs to change, in my view. And that was the case before. You know, we remember some of the Glanbia schemes had it linked to the consumer price index of basket of goods. Something like that back again, I think.
Correct. Yeah. No, but what you were saying as well, Aidan, I'll leave you alone after this, like, is that, you know, okay, the fixed milk price piece is one part of the return, but the risk they boxed off, those guys that had maybe double cow numbers or whatever, the risk they had boxed off by fixing milk price allowed them to double cow numbers in effect. That it, you know, it took that market risk out of the. So okay, while the price mightn't be the top of the market, you know what I mean, it still allowed them to double cow numbers. You know what I mean, just to kind of take an example.
Yeah, or not even double cow numbers, but just like, you know, pay off the chunk of debt for the highest point for the, you know, where the interest rates are highest and where the sum of money going out is the highest, and maybe cows aren't milking as well for the first few years either. So you're getting, you know, you're just covering yourself for those 3 or 4 years, and then they might decide, okay, listen, I the cows are milking well, I've paid off a chunk of debt. I will have more free cash available at market returns, so I won't bother. I can take the chance on the market, and I don't need to fix my price scheme anymore. But for those that are, you know, go back 3 or 4 years, like, it would have been a godsend to them, knowing that, okay, albeit you're not going to get a whole lot of money if milk price is high, but you're not going to lose a whole lot of money if milk price is low either. And that for me was, you know, it's absolutely brilliant to say that you can start up a business and say in advance that you're going to sell this much milk, or you're going to get this money forward. Yeah. No other business in the world can do that. Like, and for us to lose that opportunity, I think would be very upsetting, you know, for those, you know, yeah, young farmers or farmers that are in expansion mode. Actually, look, I mean, maybe we won't have as much expansion in the future as we've had in the last while, but we'll still have young farmers, and we need to give them certainty of being able to stay in business.
That's it for another week, folks. Thanks for watching, and indeed, thanks for listening. Thanks to all our own specialists, Aidan, Adam and Darren. Remember, you can watch back any of the recent webinars on ifj.ie/webinars, or listen to the various podcasts on ifj.ie/podcast. Shout out once again to our supporters, AXA, Grassland Agro and ESB Network, for helping us to make this show happen. We'll be back again next week. Until then, stay safe and safe farming.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.